Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzamazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about what is the right way to digest this thing called life. We have a digestive system that digests what we eat. Besides that, there's also digestion on the level of thoughts, emotions, things are happening, how to correctly work with that, how to correctly digest reality. Be with us. Nitza, please. Yeah, how to digest life. This is one of the more complicated things that we have to deal with, especially nowadays. And it's kind of hard to digest life as it is. We see it with younger children that they have a hard time to digest life as it is. Why are things happening? What's going on? Also grown-ups. All of these inner processes, we see that these are things that we're all dealing with, starting with little children and up to grown-ups and older people. And many times life presents us with different states that we don't know how to deal with. Could be acute or extreme situations like loss or accidents, but sometimes it's just life. Life itself, the day-to-day life. And we'd like to understand, why is it sometimes so hard for us to digest life that's seemingly supposed to be a good, nice, simple thing? Supposed to be. Right. Why the hardship? Where does that come from? Life was not given to us in order for us to digest it, eat it, swallow it, and enjoy ourselves. Not for that. No. We're swallowing life in a very dangerous way. And this creates many problems for us. To swallow life. That we put them in our mouth and through the throat, it goes down to our stomach and until we digest it and get rid of all of it, it costs us dearly. That it costs us dearly, this we feel. I don't think that our life was given to us in order for us to be able to digest them at all. Why? What is the meaning of life? What is it? Were we to know, then maybe we would have changed the meaning of life, the process. What are we swallowing? Why? What for? No one's asking about it. No one teaches us about it. When I was a child, when I was young, I used to ask my parents. They didn't know what to say. What did you ask? What are we living for? Simple question. You know, like a child asks, Mom, what are we living for? What's the meaning of all of this? My mom was a doctor, well-known doctor, gynecologist. She also was engaged in research, not only medicine. And she didn't know what to say. She said, we live. Because we live, we're human beings. You see, there's a still vegetative and animate. She explained everything very thoroughly. It's also kind of close to the wisdom of Kabbalah, but there's nothing new about it. There's the still, the vegetative, the animate, and human beings. And we're also on the animate level. We exist. We exist in order to bear children, help them develop, and die. And they, in their turn, do the same, and so on. Meaning, we have to live in order to arrange our life as correctly and safely as possible in the best possible way for ourselves and our offsprings. This is what I heard from my mom. And I remember that I did not accept that at all. I didn't see that anyone's enjoying life. Neither my parents, that were really working day and night all the time. also other children like myself, also the other grown-ups, at school, kindergarten, on our block. I didn't see that anyone has a real meaning to life. Live for what? In order to every day cover and cover for one's deficiencies, and at the end of the day, to fall on your bed, like Charlie Chaplin in modern times. So what do you do? So the problem in digesting life is, first of all, because it's unclear what are we living for. This is the main thing, but I don't know why. Were there a reason, a purpose, or life to give me some kind of answer that you're suffering, but after that, you're going to get a ticket to heaven, to something. Okay, it's worthwhile. Or you're going to live for 100 years now, and it's a really hard life, but each and every day you're going to gain more and more and more and more, and afterwards you pass away, and for another 50 years you're going to live in heaven. Look, this is heaven. Look. And then I look, yeah, good. It's worth it. So you have a savings plan and insurance. But we don't have any of that. And therefore, man is more miserable than the still, the vegetative, and the animate, because they don't have that question. They just live their life. Yeah, sheer instinct. We have emotion and intellect, and this question that pricks our mind, an eternal question. What am I living for? And so, I'm flawed more than all the others because I don't have an answer to the question of what am I living for, meaning I live as an animal, but I also have the mind to understand that my life has no beginning, middle, or end, that there is something whole, complete, or eternal left from them. And the main question is, what for? Why? And the more a person develops, the more educated he becomes, more ready for research, and he asks himself, why, what for? So, in our generation, we reach a state where it's better to die than live this way. It's better. What for? I heard many people say that. Children telling their parents, why did you give birth to us? If I wouldn't have been born, then what would have happened? Nothing. Look what we're doing in order for a woman not to get pregnant. And so, what's with all those seeds that didn't become babies, didn't become human beings, weren't born? What about them? Nothing. They didn't develop. That's it. There is some kind of biological case that has no personality of its own. And so fine, no one suffers, no one lives his life like a dog with his tongue hanging out, running after things all the time that won't give him any pleasure. He's just running after it all. I have no answer. So the younger generation that has this kind of feeling of an inability to digest life. It's like kind of resistance. It's kind of, I don't want to take it in the way it is. This resistance, it points at some higher need, man's higher need to understand what is the meaning of life, what is life meant for. Here you're already talking about the solution. But the hardship itself, were a person to know that all these hard states eventually will lead him to a solution, that he'll ask, and oh, now I understand that here, probably, this is where the treasure is, the solution, the something, the other half of this question, the answer to it. But I don't see that people are attaining this in any way. Our generation is facing these eternal questions, and what do they have as a result? It's interesting, because many people ask this question, and still the answer is unclear. True, because even if a person as if gets some kind of answer for himself, then it calms him down, and the others, he can't pass it on to them. But this question is so intimate, personal, particular, that there is no one answer for everyone, but everyone has to find an answer of their own, and maybe to be satisfied by it, or that it really satisfies them. I don't know why it came to mind, but many times you see little children that they don't want to eat something. I don't want that. And then you tell them, if you're going to eat, you're going to be strong, it's good for you. And somehow he opens his mouth and takes another bite. So what could convince us to swallow and digest life in order to keep on developing? People do it because they have no choice. That's it. Were the solution appealing, then I'd run to it. Suppose I'm told, there's a special door, and you open it, and behind that, the Garden of Eden. Where is it, and how much does it cost? Yeah. I'm standing in line. But because there is no such thing, then what I don't understand is everything you described up until now very precisely. If I look at how humanity developed, this is exactly what made room for the development of different religions and beliefs, each of which promise in their own way that desirable Garden of Eden. So one religion will tell you, great, you want to go there, you have to do 1, 2, 3, 4. Another religion will say, you want to go to the Garden of Eden, do this and that. Today you have like a menu. It's like you go into a restaurant, everyone has their promises. And there are billions of believers that are waiting for the Garden of Eden. I read this research that there are 2,800 different kinds of religions and beliefs in the world. Okay, so there are billions that do find satisfaction in that and in that ticket to heaven, as you said before. Maybe it helps them digest life, but there are billions that don't. I want to focus on those that aren't satisfied with that and they're not believers of one kind or another. It's good to be a believer. You know, a person shuts the curtains and lives his life, so to speak. I'm told that at the end there's the Garden of Eden. That's it. I believe in that. And you can't break that in a person. For him, it's a part of his life. I live this life however I can, and at the end there's the Garden of Eden, so it's worthwhile. So those that are content with that, let's leave them aside. Let's take the rest of the people. There are the believers and the non-believers. Let's take the non-believers for a moment. What can they do? What can the wisdom of Kabbalah renew in their life in order to allow them to understand this thing called life a bit better? What does the wisdom of Kabbalah have to offer a person? The Garden of Eden. Again, the Garden of Eden. Ah, Kabbalah promises that too. Exactly. So this is the Garden of Eden number, but it's a different Garden of Eden. There you have virgins and good food and everything you want, if we're talking about Arabs. For Christians, I don't know what, prayers and something. For Jews, what do they have? I don't know, I didn't research the field, but let's focus on the wisdom of Kabbalah. It promises the Garden of Eden too? Yeah? So it's just another religion, belief, No, it's not a religion or belief, because the wisdom of Kabbalah tells a person you shall see your world in your lifetime. This is something else. It's not that you'll die, and after you die, then this is what you'll get. But now, before you die, you have to open the door to the Garden of Eden. That's something else. How does this faith or belief... Is it? It depends on how we interpret this word. Because it confuses. Because I understand that the Garden of Eden that you're talking about, let's try and describe it. For example, like you said before, that for Muslims, maybe heaven or the Garden of Eden is 72 virgins and different things that they're promised. But what does the wisdom of Kabbalah promise? The wisdom of Kabbalah promises a whole, complete, and eternal life. Perfection. And this perfection is achieved on condition that we attain the quality of bestowal and love toward others. So you're actually saying, wait a moment, Kabbalah promises an eternal life, but for me it's hard to digest life as it is. You want to give me an eternal life? No, no, whole and complete life. And how is that different than what we have now? That you don't know what wholeness and perfection is. You're living out of deficiency. You're lacking something? Now I got it. I lack something else? I got it. The wisdom of Kabbalah says, no, this isn't life. It's like a dog on the street looking every time, finding something for himself. It's the life of a dog. The eternal, whole, complete life is one which fulfills me with eternal peace, that I'm on the level of the upper force, of the Creator. I see from one end of the world to the other. I understand and know all the worlds, in all times, all the souls, everything in general, everything there is, that it's included inside of me, that everything that exists in reality, if you can say that it exists, it all exists in me. I understand, feel, know, control it, and that's my life. That there's nothing more than that. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah promises a person. And here, in this life, not after I die, and then no one comes back, so you can't say. But in this life, I'm trying to imagine life as you're depicting it, to feel it like you're describing, because my life today is, I'm trying to all the time, I lack something and I'm searching for where can I get it, absorb it into myself. There was this very interesting case in the city of Bnei Brak when I used to live there. I'm sure that people still remember that. There was this notice in the newspaper, and also, you know, these small posters on billboards. There was this one person who was pretty well known. He said, in a short period of time, as the doctors say, and I also feel that, I am going to die for sure. There's no question about it. I want to make a deal with you. When I'll already be there and you'll be here, you pray for the ascent of my soul there, and I promise you, I'm writing this down now, that from there I will care for you here. A kind of agreement. You know, it was on billboards on the street. Interesting. My teacher, of course, He laughed. First of all, how come he thinks that he's going to heaven? Why does a person think that that's how it's going to be? And how can he know what, how about these systems? So, we laughed a bit about it. What I want to say is, you see, people want to promise their continuity. Going back to what Kabbalah promises, you shall see your world in your lifetime. He promised that a person can reach the Garden of Eden in his lifetime here and now. And when you described this Garden of Eden, you described an eternal kind of peace in which a person understands and digests his life. According to this method of the wisdom of Kabbalah, how does a person attain that? You said that there is a basic condition that a person acquires a new quality of love for others. What's the connection between developing this new quality of loving others and feeling and being able to digest life? That's life altogether. Otherwise, what are you promised? 72 virgins? No, I'm putting that aside. And, you know, a good barbecue wet. No, I'm not going into these promises. I only want to understand, what does the wisdom of Kabbalah promise? I summarized it. If a person will develop a quality of love toward others, he will be able to digest life. This the promise? Yeah. Why? Why if a person develops a quality of love for others, this will allow him to digest life? Because then he will feel all people, all souls that exist in this world and that also come in their different incarnations from above down, from below up, he will digest them as existing in him, related to him, and he's related to them, that they're interconnected. And therefore, in that, he will feel the whole of reality. And then the entire reality exists in him, and then he'll be like the Creator, King of the world. And how is that related to your ability to digest what's happening to you in life? Because if I'm connected by ties of love that I integrate with the rest of the souls, then sure I know what's happening with me because I am in a single system with them. So the reason for which it's hard for a person to digest life today, it's only because he's not connected with others, he's separate on his own, and he's trying to suckle from life whatever he can, and he feels that he's suffocating. Right. And you're saying that there is a kind of trick here, that if we connect emotionally, then all of us, each of us through the others, we start feeling the whole of reality. Because man is on the highest level of reality, and then in that we include the whole of reality. So I know the entire world, all the souls, everything, and the one that fulfills them, gives birth to them, enlivens them, it's all mine. I just don't get where you're saying that love connects a person to the rest of the souls. I don't feel that that's my problem. I have a problem with my neighbors at work. You know, souls, they're all kind. The stories. People aren't that great. So how is that related to the people around you? You start loving them. And then what? I understand that this is the initial condition in order to open the gates of heaven. Fine. Suppose somehow, I don't know how, but I started some kind of miracle. I don't know. I started loving people around me. How does that help me digest life? Because then you start feeling what life is. Life is the common force that is in circulation in all the souls, circulating in all the souls. Where are these souls? What are these souls? the way each and every one feels them. So, going back, if I start loving the people around me, then I start feeling the flow of life? Yes, in everyone. And how does this flow of life help me digest life? You feel a collective life, a comprehensive life. And it's all called the upper force that fulfills everyone, enlivens everyone. You start feeling the source of life in it, not just for one person, but for everyone. This general source of life for everyone is called Creator, Boe in Hebrew, from the words Boe, come and see. You come to a state where you reveal Him. So when something unpleasant happens that I really can't digest, I simply can't. How now, if I feel love towards others, how do I relate to that unpleasant thing? You accept the good and the bad. Because it's clear to you that if you correct yourself, then what you feel as bad, you'll feel as good. What do you mean by correct yourself? Correct your ego. Meaning, to connect to others in love, that's to correct. Yeah. And how will that change that bad feeling that suddenly I'll see as something good? Because you'll connect to them in a good and nice way. But something bad happened to me that I can't digest. I don't know. Something happened in life. So I'm telling you, if you'll start relating to other people with love, you'll start feeling that your life is filled with love too. And you will start feeling good. You'll start feeling good. And nothing to add. So what is the key? What is the key to correctly digest this thing called life? Love is the key to the doors of heaven. And the Garden of Eden itself is where all of us reach a whole, complete, and eternal connection. Dr. Lightman, you gave us a lot of things to think about. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.